And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, people? So we are, we're coming fresh off of this Revengers watch party. And we're just going to jump right into this thing. I think, as we talked about before on the show, and probably as you've heard on other podcasts, as you've listened to other shows on the Revengers podcast network, there was a little shindig that the editor-in-chief of Revenge of the Fans, Mario Francisco Robles, put on. And that was a watch party to see Halloween. So we had about, 13, 16 people or so that went. It was really cool. Got to meet some of our listeners and some other folks that are followers of Revenge of the Fans and the Fanboy podcast. Quick shout out to Ashri, who we met. It was great to meet you. So a couple of drinks before, a little fiasco with makeup paint.
Damn those rules.
Those rules. You know what? I'm still talking about that with my wife.
I'm still talking
about that because I'm like,
it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Anyways, apparently do not go to a movie theater in costume or with face paint on. You will not be permitted.
At least not a Regal cinema.
Yeah. So, yeah, we saw a little thing called Halloween, which is still tearing up the box office. Is number one.
Yep.
For second week in a row.
Yeah. So now, and it was a great time and with great people, so which is the most important thing. But now, anyone who's listened to this podcast since the beginning, especially if you listened to episode 5, which was the episode where we went through the Halloween franchise after the trailer for this new Halloween had come out, you will know that the original Halloween is one of my favorite movies of all time, and that the Halloween franchise in general is one of my favorite film franchises of all time, warts and all. And go back and listen to that episode if you haven't, because I get into details about why and how and all that stuff. But so we went to see this thing, and I was very hyped up for it, and the reviews were really strong, 79% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is, pretty good for this type of a movie. And, John Carpenter's doing the music, and Jamie Lee Curtis is back as Laurie Strode, and it was going to ignore all the sequels and be a companion piece and a direct follow-up to the original, and all this great stuff. And the movie happened, and I immediately turned to you after the movie, after the credits were done, and I said, that was just okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really... nothing to write home about, honestly. We were in the same boat. We kind of like gave it a middle of the road thumbs up, if a thumbs up, not even a thumbs up. I was definitely excited about seeing the movie, and again, to your point, the critics' score was good, audience score was in line with that, and we talked about that on last week's episode. And there was really nothing special about this movie. There really wasn't. I wouldn't even rank it in like my top 5 slasher films. It was just kind of like, sure.
Yeah. Okay. It's not even my favorite sequel. In Halloween at this point. Pretty much the group that we were with had mostly the same reaction. Like, oh, it's okay. And the more I thought about it, though, over the course of the weekend, the less I liked about it, actually.
Yeah.
And the more I talked about it. And it's funny because while the reviews were strong and there have been, fans and people that I've seen that have really liked it, a lot of the people that I've spoken to, like outside of like our Twitter universe and outside of like the Revenge of the Fans circle, they've had the same reaction. Like, yeah, it was disappointing. It was okay. And it's interesting because I feel like maybe that's why we didn't see all the reaction and the hype on Twitter after the first week.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a really, really good point. Yeah, I mean, I get that. I totally do. There is like, you know, people see it and they probably file it away like, yeah, all right, sure. I don't want to see it again. So that's kind of where I am. Like, this isn't even a movie I'd want to collect or buy. Now, I know you're a completionist, so it will likely you likely will be compelled to purchase it and complete your set. But for me, I here's the funny thing. I own the original, and I do own the Rob Zombie take on it. And you know what? Now, it's been a while, so I'll say this with a backdoor policy where I can get out of it, but I think the Rob Zombie version was better. The first one.
So I don't know. I really dislike the Rob Zombie version. But you know, it's interesting, there are parallels though. So let's talk about this for a second. Let's talk about the movie itself, because there is a parallel, one very important parallel between this movie and the Rob Zombie Halloween. And I think that parallel is the fact that both movies were made by creative teams and/or people who claimed to love the original. Right?
Right.
And
right.
Claimed to want to continue the spirit and keep the spirit of that original movie. And I thought both movies failed epically at capturing the feel and understanding anything about what made the original successful. So that's the parallel between this and Rob Zombie's movie. The thing that came to me this weekend is that what I really didn't like about this movie is the fact that, one, it's not scary at all. And it's not scary to me because I don't find slasher films scary. So I've never been a slasher film guy. Like, I like the Nightmare on Elm Street series because there's some meat to it. You know, there's something more to it than just senseless killing. I have no use for the Friday the 13th franchise. It's a waste to me. And all, like any other, like, you know, low-grade slasher stuff, never had any use for it. Blood doesn't really disturb me. Like, I've never been the type that, like, gets disturbed by, like, knives going through people or anything like that. I'm creeped out by, like, the guy lurking in the shadows. You know, like, that type of stuff. And music and things like that. That's why the original grabs me, because the original Halloween is not really a slasher film.
No.
It's considered one just because of the genre, but, you know, it's a stalker film. You know, Michael Myers is playing a cat and mouse game with those girls in that movie. You know, he's kind of toying with them, you know, like, he's coming out of bushes and then he's gone. He's hiding behind the laundry hanging and then he's gone. He's popping up here or there. Like, he's not just senselessly marauding through a neighborhood, just killing anything that's moving. He is playing a true cat and mouse game with these girls, terrorizing them. And that whole thing is really creepy. And the use of the music and everything is what plays into that. This Halloween is a slasher film.
Yeah.
I feel like this Halloween has more in common, believe it or not, with Halloween 2 than it does with the original Halloween. In fact, when Michael Myers gets to Haddonfield in this movie, he walks right into that garage, picks up the hammer, and kills the woman in the red robe with the hair curls, which is a direct homage to Halloween 2, the opening scene.
I mean,
he is just, it is just a senseless, like, slasher film. Like, he is just steamrolling through Haddonfield at a rapid pace, just killing people, and there's no atmosphere. The music, while it's good when it's there, is kind of, it's not there as much as it needs to be. Like, there's long stretches of this movie where there's no music at all, which I found interesting. There's one great piece of new music in a scene where he's chasing Laurie's granddaughter, which is like he puts like a new spin on the original melody, which is really cool, but it's just not in there enough.
Yeah, it was quick. It was a quick and dirty track. You know, it's funny. I had written down some things and you call one of the things that I know you said it's paying homage to Halloween 2, but you know, it's funny. I've only seen Halloween 2 once, So some of that stuff, admittedly, I missed, but seeing it sort of in this film threw me off a little bit, if I'm being honest, because it just felt senseless. Like, he walks into a shed, grabs a hammer. The woman doesn't know he's in the room at all.
Right.
He walks past the knife, kills her, then grabs the knife. Like, I didn't really. And if it was just a head nod or a hat tip, fine. But like, it didn't. I don't know. It just didn't really. I didn't really understand that, and just the connectivity of the killings to the granddaughter of Laurie Strode. Like, they basically kill all her friends. Like, so how did
Right.
he, you know, he doesn't know her. Yeah, admittedly, I don't think he knew that that was her granddaughter, right? So
No, yeah, I mean, in right, he shouldn't,
he, right,
because there's
so.
no real connection in this movie other than like he does see Laurie Strode and then he obviously recognizes her when they kind of first see each other, but
Right, but he doesn't know about her
no,
granddaughter.
he seemingly doesn't have his motivation is just like they basically make him out to be in this movie like. You know, he's someone who hasn't eaten in 40 years, and now Haddonfield is a giant filet mignon. Like that's
Right.
essentially his motivation. It's just like he needs to kill, so he's
Yeah.
making up for lost time, basically. I mean, they don't say that in the movie, but that's what I pulled out of it.
I mean, but then, you know, just the idea of him, if that's the case, then he should have killed everybody he came in contact with. Like, literally, but he doesn't. There are certain people he didn't kill.
No, yeah, like I mean, after he kills the woman in the robe, he's
Right.
walking down the street, like
Yeah.
passing people,
Right.
and until he finds like another house, and then he goes into a house, and so maybe he only likes killing people in houses. I don't know. It's
What now was that house was not his house, right?
no,
His older house.
no.
No. So like, I didn't understand that part either.
Well, it was just, yeah, I mean, look, this. And even the reviews that I read that were positive will say like the plot is not the strong suit of this film.
Is it the tw is it the twit? Is it like the so-called twist? Oh, but guys, by the way, what this is heavy, heavy spoiler territory.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen the film,
I mean, we're a couple weeks in now, so we're okay to do
yeah.
we feel okay to do spoilers. Anyway, if you haven't seen it or if you really care about being spoiled, then maybe tune out, but because we will get into pretty much everything in this movie. But yeah, I mean, the opening, right, is weird. And you've pretty much, even if you haven't seen the movie, you've probably seen this whole opening because they released it
It's in
online
the trailer.
where, you know, these podcasters go to see him at the sanitarium and they have the mask and it's the people, the other, inmates start freaking out for like no reason in particular, other than I guess it was supposed to be like an artsy effect thing that it was supposed to be creepy, and it just
Yeah,
comes
and then
off
they're like,
like,
it's calling to them, Michael.
yeah, what? I don't know, it was just weird. It doesn't fit the tone of the film at all.
Right.
And
The real
then,
supernatural.
yeah, and then you get the opening credit sequence, which is a direct takeoff on the original. They use the same font. They even
Yeah.
made it a little blurry. But the difference is the pumpkin this time is deflated and then it kind of inflates,
Which is
which is
symbolic.
cool. Right. That was cool. Nothing wrong with any of that. But then, you know, you meet Laurie Strode. So this was my other big issue with the movie, which I didn't expect to be an issue, which is, I guess, why I was disappointed with it. Laurie Strode in this movie, and I mentioned this way back in episode 5, that my issue with her in Halloween H2O was that she was like this just paranoid alcoholic who was didn't have her life together at all. Like she was completely falling apart.
Yeah, she's broken.
Yeah, broken. And in this movie, I thought she was going to be more like of like a Sarah Connor in like Terminator 2, right? Where there's some wounds there, but she's like ready. And in
Right.
this movie, she's still very much just a paranoid. Like, I don't know if she's an alcoholic, but there is the one scene where she like chugs the wine in the restaurant, and like she is very broken, does not have her stuff together. She's a survivalist, but she's like a paranoid survivalist. And she's not the strong, like, I thought this movie was going to be more of like a cat and mouse game between her and him.
Yeah.
And that she would be more of like a Loomis character in this, like where Loomis was like, you know, Captain Ahab and Michael Myers was Moby Dick. Like, I thought that was going to be her role in this movie, and it's really not.
Yeah.
You know, she's lost her family, or her daughter, Judy Greer, who's a good actress. That character is just not well written.
She's a whiny. Waste.
Yeah, it's kind of a waste.
Such a waste.
The granddaughter's good. She was one of my favorite things in the movie.
There's, you know, it's funny because in the trailer, you really don't get much of a sense of the, at least in the trailers that I had seen, because I kind of disconnected from seeing anything. But you don't get a sense of like what her role is. But, and let's be honest, like, when you really think about the granddaughter, what was her purpose? Really, there was none.
One of the other fundamental issues with this movie is that there are a lot of things in this movie that exist just to get things from point A to point B, mm-hmm. and. Like, there are entire characters that we lose Laurie Strode at one point, right?
Yeah.
For what seemed like a long time, but it's probably not as long as it, because the movie's not that long. But you lose her and you start to get introduced to the granddaughter and her circle of friends who essentially don't serve any purpose, like you just said. Like, there's a scene where they're at like a school dance.
Mm-hmm.
And like her, because you get introduced to like her boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
or at least the guy she's seeing or whatever. And then at the dance, he winds up kissing some other girl. And then he acts like a total jerk and he throws her phone into, was it like the punch bowl or like
pudding
or something? Yeah. And it's just like a total jerk. And that literally goes nowhere. Like, that whole storyline goes nowhere. The whole point of it was just for him to be a jerk so she could leave the party, thus going with some other guy, which then leads to them coming in contact with Michael Myers and so on and so forth.
Well, the other point of that, too, was to remove her phone from the equation,
exactly.
Therefore creating some tension between, you know, her mother and the grandmother of, like, where is she? But then ultimately, they go to Laurie Strode's house and totally forget about her. They're all cool with going down into the cellar without the granddaughter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, and that happens a lot. So there's, you know, there's a scene, and we'll talk about it now, because it's like the big twist in the movie. So there's a doctor, as Laurie calls him, the new Loomis. This Dr. Sartan, or whatever his name is, who's Michael's psychiatrist. And after Michael escapes, he, of course, he's on the bus with them. And he winds up, you know, going through the town to try and seemingly capture him. And the twist is that it something that to me was like right out of Halloween 6. It was Halloween 6 bad. After no buildup, after no tease or anything,
right. This
doctor kills like the cop or the sheriff and basically doesn't want Michael to die. And then actually in one of the more awkward moments in the entire Halloween franchise, he pops up with the mask on. Because he's a heavier guy, so the mask is like stretched out, and he's dragging Michael Myers behind him and puts him in the car in the back seat with the granddaughter, with Laurie's granddaughter, and he goes on this thing about how, I don't know, he's always wanted to know what it felt like to kill, and now he knows, and trying to connect with it. It's bizarre, but
yeah. The
whole point of it was literally to get Michael Myers to Laurie Strode's house.
Right.
That was the whole point of that plot twist. That's the only reason why it exists. This movie, this plot twist that almost brings this film to a grinding halt, exists just to get Michael Myers to Laurie Strode's house. And let me tell you why that was ridiculous on a number of levels. It's ridiculous, one, because there was a much better way to do it. So when the granddaughter gets away, right? And she's running through the forest. I was like, mm-hmm. oh, well, this is the opportunity now. Michael is just going to chase her through the forest, which will then lead to the house. And you'll get a nice callback to the original movie, which they did one in H2O as well, where she's running to the house. She gets to the door. She's banging, let me in, let me in. And then Michael's slowly stalking her. And then they open the door just as he gets there. And then Laurie and Michael go face. Like, that's the type of thing they could have done. Instead, they just had Michael steal, like, a sheriff's car and drive over there after he stomps on the yeah. doctor's face, thus exploding it.
Right, like a pumpkin.
Like a pumpkin. It's also ridiculous because Laurie Strode has this house that's behind, like, a the president doesn't have this kind of security. It's behind a gate, and it's like she doesn't let anybody in, and she's all, like, in survivalist mode. She's got a panic room. And the whole time in the movie, she keeps talking about how she wanted him to escape. Because she's been ready. She's wanted this moment for 40 years where she could finally face him.
Right.
So then why the hell didn't she just bring him, lead him to her house? Why did he have, why did they have to run and hide in her house trying to see if maybe he will come or not?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was like, oh, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, like,
she, you know, she assumed that he was
going to be coming from her, but, for her. But they certainly didn't make it easy for him. And had this right. doctor not done what he did, he may not have ever gotten there.
Right.
So it's
right.
like, if you're, I thought that's where the whole Laurie, Michael, Loomis thing, I thought would come into play. Like, she would sort of be hunting him down throughout the town. Yeah, and then that know, would lead to her somehow trying to get him on her turf.
Right.
Where she would have the advantage. And then that's how he would get there. And she would lead him, because this is what she wanted, lead him there. Because even once he gets to the house, like, she doesn't seem to have any advantage with it being on her turf. Like, he's still in control until, like, the very end.
Right.
Which is also weird.
Right. Yeah, so, like, her idea was, I'm just going to wait in my panic room, and when I hear his footsteps closest to me, I'm going to shoot through the floorboards. Like, what? What? And you had gates only on the upstairs portion of your room? Why don't you just wait in your kitchen? And when he got into your living room, you just flipped the switch and all the gates come down and you got them locked in there. Because it would have ended the movie 45 minutes earlier. There's a whole bunch of stupidity that was flying around that movie. And I remember just, like, thinking to myself, and it you know, fine, okay, I get it. They're building the tension and this and that. It wasn't until I got home and let it digest for a little bit where it was like, yeah, that the sloppy, lazy writing, in my opinion. Like, it just didn't. It didn't really feel like a Halloween movie. It felt like a Friday the 13th movie to me.
Yeah,
you know. It really did. Like, oh, let's come up with all of these, like, ingenious ways that Michael Myers is killing.
It killing is. People. That's why I say this is a total slasher film. This movie has a high body count, even though a lot of it happens off screen. But they do have these elaborate, like, you know, ripped jaws and stuff like that. It's very much just a slasher film. I think more so than any movie in the entire franchise. I mean, maybe Halloween 5 is the only thing I think that comes close as far as just being obsessed with senseless violence, like, that doesn't play a role in it all. But even Halloween 2, which has a much higher body count, well, I mean, Halloween, the original, doesn't have a high body count at all. Five people and a dog die. One of the five is Judith Myers, who gets killed in 1963, 15 years before the movie, like the main plot of the movie. And the other is the truck driver that happens off screen. So there's really just the three teenagers, Linda,
right.
Annie, and Bob are the only mm-hmm. three that really get killed. And there's hardly any blood in that movie. So Halloween 2 does have a higher body count, and the violence is a little bit more senseless and more like kind of Friday the 13th-esque, but there's still the plot. You still have Loomis hunting him down. It's still the, right. you know, Laurie in the hospital. There's still something to it. And even in part 4, which is a movie that I'm a fan of, yes, the violence is a little bit more over the top, but again, you still have the storyline with the niece, and that's kind of an effective story, and you still have Loomis hunting him down. Mm-hmm. Which is the main mm-hmm. plot of the film. So this movie, though, like, it just the plot just isn't there. Nobody's really hunting him. Lori is, I'm not really sure what she is in this movie. She's not a hunter.
She's still not bait.
The hunted. Yeah, like, but she's just kind of there. The final confrontation, which I've heard a lot about, how people say, oh, this movie, even though it's flawed, the final confrontation is worth it. Well, was it? Because I didn't think it was. I didn't think that final confrontation was good enough to bring this movie home.
What you mean, where they trap him?
Yeah, well, where they finally... Well, because there is that final confrontation between Laurie and Michael is so great that it makes the whole movie worth it. Is it? No.
He's able. Okay, let's think about that for a second. So, in one foul swoop, he's able to rip out somebody's jaw with their teeth and their tongue, all that good stuff, right? So let's measure that. That's quite a strong person. Then he basically chokes out. He kills a kid too in this one, which is like bizarre.
He does.
The fact that they show that was like, okay, mildly disturbing.
I mean, he's not a push. He does leave a baby, thankfully.
Well, so that I was gonna say, I'm like, I'm surprised they didn't push the envelope and have him like snuff out a little child, defenseless baby. But so anyway, so he rips out people's teeth and then he, you know, chokes out a kid. He chokes out he basically quickly strangles a woman, no problem. He bashes some dude's face in. Into bathroom stalls, right? He gets his hands on Lori, and it takes him some time to take her out. Like, probably 45 seconds too long before she's able to blow off his fingers. There was like a lot of weird stuff where he does get his hands on her.
Yes.
And ultimately...
And those are, we could...
I get it. But still,
if we want to really nitpick, because I'm even leaving out the stuff that, look, obviously with movies like this, you're always going to have to accept certain things
out,
right?
The window.
So we're not going to get, I'm not even going to get into the whole how ridiculous it is to be deciding to transport Michael Myers on Halloween night after 40 years, because we have to, there's things like that you just have to accept because the movie does have to exist, right? So the plot has to move
some leaps.
Yeah. So there's always going to be those, but we're talking about like the stuff that's just like really egregious, like, and that's, so it seems like we're nitpicking, but these aren't, when you watch the movie, these aren't really the nitpicks. Like there are things you could actually really nitpick about.
But those are things that I think you as you're watching the film, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, no, that doesn't sit well with me. How about this line? It's 40 years to the day and Michael Myers has, you know, escaped on the day in which he, you know, tried to kill Laurie Strode. And the, I don't know, mayor? Is it what this dude was of Haddonfield?
Is that what he was? Yeah, I still didn't figure out. I wasn't sure if he was like the sheriff or the
mayor. I don't know who he was, but then he's like, well, let's not get that out or it's gonna be a field, and he like walks away like, ha ha ha.
Yeah.
I'm like,
that's almost something right out of Jaws.
What?
Right? Where you had the corrupt, like, the mayor who didn't want anybody to know. Yeah.
You're like, I'm just going to sweep this under the rug. He tried to kill someone 40 years ago, but he's not going to do that again.
Right.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
The other thing that I felt was a missing plot point, and the doctor kind of fills us in on it, is how he got out in the first place. And they said, he said something like, as soon as we were in the area, he like attacked the guards and he was unstoppable and all of that stuff. It mean after the reveal that the doctor was, I don't want to say in cahoots with Michael, but sort of in cahoots with Michael. Maybe it was the doctor that derailed the transport of Michael Myers.
So when he does the twist, right? He doesn't do the twist in the movie. I mean, when he, that would have probably
come
been better.
On, baby.
Yeah. When the twist happens and it's revealed that he's whatever, I actually thought they were going to say that he was responsible for that accident.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, you don't get to that point. And even when you find him on the bus, right? When the accident first happens, like, I almost felt like they kind of wanted you to think that he maybe had something to do with it.
Right.
But like they never go in on that. So I don't really know if
because he gets shot, and then it's right. like yeah, and what's up with the guys in the trench coats? Why does every doctor have to have a trench coat? I almost thought that it was too on the nose
yeah.
to Loomis. Well, but, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, but look, there are – so that's the
Sorry,
other thing.
I'll start picking this whole thing
yeah,
apart.
Yeah, this movie is
– there's lots of loose threads.
It's dripping with nostalgia, and I almost feel like to a fault.
Absolutely.
I feel like this movie – is the cinematic equivalent, like the movie itself is the equivalent of what the Danny Elfman's score was in Justice League.
Oh my God. I have no comment. My God. Woo. Chris, you're a savage.
So, and I'm pretty sure you get where I'm going with this, because I feel like this movie is so... it's dripping with so much nostalgia that they forgot that they actually needed to make a movie. Like, they just were like, let's do the greatest hits. We're going to do throwbacks to this. We're going to have the guy in the ghost sheet. We're going to have the woman like from Halloween 2. We're going to have the musical cues, just enough of them, because the music in this movie isn't even used for atmosphere like it was in the original or in some of the sequels. It was used almost like, oh, here's this theme. Here's that theme. Mm-hmm. Just to give you like the greatest hits. And like even the mask. How did he know that those podcasters had the mask and were going to be at that gas station and that he should look in the trunk and get their mask? Like, how is that? Because the mask existed because he needed to get it, and it needed to be there for the nostalgia factor. So there's so many things in this movie that it's just so, like I said, they went through the hassle of making the credits replicate the original. They had that attention to detail when it came to credits, but all these other things like plot was something they just said, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is a check your brain at the door kind of thing. And if you like watching people get murdered for no rhyme or reason, like, and I see that with no rhyme or reason, just coincidentally, like, and when we were talking about the friends that get killed, I mean, literally, this girl, like Laurie Strode's granddaughter, all of her friends, with the exception of her scumbag boyfriend, get murdered. Like, so her friend is on the phone with her. Hey, what's going on? How was it with whatever his effing name is? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I'm babysitting some kid. Who, by the way, had the funniest lines ever.
Yeah, that kid and the granddaughter are the two best things in this movie.
Yeah, like Danny McBride totally had something to do with that kid's lines.
I'm sure, yeah.
But, well, the kid escapes, and where does he go?
No, like, yeah, again, just another, it just didn't matter.
He just disappeared. Yeah. Like, the kid like ran out of the house and then gone. You know, he didn't run into a police officer. That was the end of that.
Maybe he's hanging out with the granddaughter's boyfriend that we never saw ever again.
Yes, probably. But literally, like, kills everybody. Oh, I know this. We're just randomly walking down the street in Haddonfield, and we're gonna take a shortcut. And Michael Myers just happens to be over here. How big is Haddonfield? Is it like, I don't know, 1 square foot? Like, he just definitely going to be exactly where he needed to be, which is to kill some kid. For what reason? I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, there's just a lot of So the movie, and I mean, and we're kind of now really just ripping it apart. I mean,
yeah,
I'm trying to think, like, I mean, some of the things that were actually effective in it. And that's where it starts to lose me, because, you know, I was thinking, and over the weekend, I was like, well, I'm going to focus on some of the positives. And then I tried to think of them, and I was really struggling to find them. I mean, you want to say the very end is good. Okay.
Oh, where they like kill him?
Yeah, where they get him in the trap.
That was an interesting twist where she kind of lures the daughter, lures him by making it seem like she's... yeah. Weak.
Well, and there's still debatable.
And for all intents and purposes, she is.
Yes, it's still debatable.
She found her. I don't know, her strength, because you know, muscle memory, maybe. Who knows?
My theory on that was, I thought at first maybe it was a plot,
Nah.
But then it's like, no, that probably was just especially based on everything else that happens in this movie, it was probably just that abrupt. Like, she just found her strength.
I think it was muscle memory.
Yeah.
Oh, she touched her rifle and it all like zoomed back.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I can be a warrior too.
Had we spent more time, and it's funny because you do spend time with the families, but had we spent more time with them together, actually talking through their stuff so that you get a little bit more of an idea of what's going on with them, like, I think that would have been more rewarding. But yeah. Everyone from Lori to Karen, the daughter, to they're so unlikable for most of this movie that, like, that moment of redemption, I don't think paid off for me because it's so quick and it's so abrupt. And then they're riding in the car at the police car at the end, and it's just like, that's it. So you don't even get like a fallout, really. Like, there's no moment afterward where like they all just kind of reunite and have a moment to kind of talk it out and say, hey, you know what? We get it. You were right. Mm-hmm. That doesn't even happen. Like, it's implied, but it doesn't happen. And then that's it. And you cut to the credits. And then they catch him in a trap. It turns out the panic room was really a cage for him. And they burn him a la Halloween 2 style. Again, mm-hmm. another homage. And more homages to Halloween 2, I think, in this movie than there were to the original. But then the credits roll. And they focus on the knife. The granddaughter is still holding the butcher knife that she had stabbed right. Michael with. And I don't know if that was meant to say, like,
she picks it up, who knows?
Or whatever, but the very end of the credits, you hear Michael breathing, which, you know, there's going to be a sequel because they've already hired a writer for it, and the movie's making a ton of money on a $10 million budget. It's already made like 170-something million worldwide, so it's going to get a sequel. Where that sequel goes, I have no idea.
So, but I'm being honest, I don't want it. I do not want the sequel at all. Don't want to see it either. If it does come out, I don't think I will. I think at this point, with the remakes from Rob Zombie and then this attempt, I think the Halloween franchise is just becoming a cash grab.
Well, and, I mean, that's what these things always become, cash.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, when we were going into this whole thing and you hear that the director is having conversations with John Carpenter and, you know, he's signing off on it, which is like, dude, are you senile? You know, and we really want to respect the character, and we're going to bring Jamie Lee Curtis back. We're going to bring the original actor that was under the mask back. All of that stuff. And you get excited about that, and then you're kind of delivered this. You know, like, you didn't read the recipe, right? You said you're going to make an apple pie. You had the crust, you had the butter, you had the apples. And what you turned it into was like, I don't know, a pile of mush. And it just undercooked. Didn't do right, you know?
Yeah.
The
worst part about this for me is the fact that I was hoping that this movie would be what it was sold as, which is a companion piece to the original. So that if I wanted to, I would be able to watch the original and then this movie together, and it would be one nice story. These two movies don't work at all together. I mean, timeline-wise, yes, but other than that, they don't really blend well. They don't feel the same. They don't look the same. They don't sound the same. I'm surprised at how many people have actually said that this movie does feel more like the original. Yes, maybe compared to, I don't even know. But, I mean, if you're comparing it to some of the later sequels or movies like H2O or Resurrection or the zombie stuff, then maybe. But I don't know how anyone who really has seen the original or loves the original feels like this movie captured the spirit of any of that.
Yeah.
I don't even know if this movie is as effective as Halloween H2O.
Ooh. Wow.
I mean, in some ways. Yeah. You know what I mean? When you really think about it. And maybe it is. I gotta watch it again. But I mean, I don't know.
To me, there's just too many, like, aha moments. Like, too many hat tips. Too much fan service. which I feel like undercut. You know, you spend all that time kind of backing yourself into the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, that it doesn't ultimately deliver. It's like, you know, sugarless whipped cream. Wow, I'm in a baking mood today. But, you know, like the scene where Lori gets pushed out of the window and, you know, her body's there, and then Michael happens to look down, and then you get the music cue, and yeah, her body's gone. Really? Is this what we're doing? There's so much of that.
That was fine. I mean, that actually was one of the cooler moments in the movie.
But by the end of the movie, you're kind of like, of course we're going to do that. Oh, I bet he's hiding in the closet like she did.
Well, and the closets are the same exact closets, because, you know, that's what she decided to build.
That's what she did. And it's, you know, it's 2018, and apparently people still hang clothes out to dry.
They do, and she has a lot of mannequins.
They hang their clothes out to dry in October.
She has a lot of mannequins. She has a model of the house.
The house.
Which is, because, you know, why wouldn't you? So there's a whole story there with Laurie Strode that we haven't seen, where she apparently went through some things.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole lot of crazy in her house, and you don't really get to see it. But as far as living it out, but there clearly is a whole lot of crazy going on in her house there, her compound.
Yeah.
So
if you were to rank it, scale from 10.
From a scale of 1 to 10? Well, I said it was okay at best, even though it was disappointing. So, I mean, I want to say 5, but I almost want to say maybe 4.5. Because I'm somewhere in that mix anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. Yeah, that's kind of where I am for 4.5. There's just too much. It's a lot of baggage with this.
Like I said, I felt like it was okay at best. So I guess at best I would have to give it a 5, but so that's where I'm going, 4.5, because I don't know that it actually even got to okay the more I thought about it. It was just a really unsatisfying experience for me. But, you know, hopefully, some people, I know Tavo loved it or liked it a lot anyway. So, you know, and there were, you know, a couple people that we were with who really liked it a lot. And that's great.
I mean, look, I love bread and some people are gluten free. So that's what this is about.
Right.
Comes is like just missing some good stuff, man.
Sure. So
alrighty.
So, and just out of curiosity, since now that we've spoken about it, I will throw this out to Tavo, though. I would be very curious to hear the details of what you really enjoyed about this film. So please share that on Twitter or just DM us if it's like a long explanation, because I'd really be fascinated. I have yet to be able to sit down and speak to somebody about this movie as a huge fan of this franchise who truly really loved this movie or liked it a lot. So I'd like to get that perspective. I mean, I've read critics' reviews and that's whatever, but I want to hear from like fans who really enjoyed this movie, because I'd like to see what that perspective is like and just see some of the things that you liked as opposed to, you know, what we thought about this. So not just Tavo, I mean, anybody who is listening that saw this movie and really enjoyed it, just send it to us. Let us know what your thoughts were. Get spoilery, get into the details, just whatever. Tell us what you loved about it.
Yes. Great.
So this wasn't a big news week, which is why we just spent like 40 some minutes talking about a Halloween movie, but you know, a couple of things did come out. So Matt Reeves, Batman, the Batman, looks like they're taking their time with it.
As they should.
As they should. Yes. I'm very okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, Bill Jett-Ramey of Batman on Film, which guys, by the way, you should totally listen to them. They are like the quintessential Batman podcast. He had talked like a while ago, or even written an article about how Matt Reeves is going to take his sweet time getting Batman right. And when he was good and ready with the story and sort of, you know, the overall, I guess, placement of a new Batman film, he would release it. And that would be 2021. Now, a lot of people initially, I mean, I think Batman was supposed to come out, was it, I don't want to say 2020 first, because, you know, Ben Affleck was originally supposed to direct. So I almost feel like it was like 2019, and then it got pushed to 2020, and now it's 2021 or even later than that. And I'll say, you know, and I know Batman's your all-time favorite character, and he's certainly one of mine. Yeah, I think he needs some breathing room, man. They really need to nail the character, get it right, you know, get a villain that's really going to push the boundaries of Batman to the next level, and get itself, you know, have a movie franchise, because I think, you know, he's gonna do a series of films that gets further and further away from the mess that is Justice League, and however, you know, however that shakes out. And, you know, so I hope that they certainly give him enough breathing space, for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, we've gotten a lot of Batman in,
hell yeah,
you know, the last however many years. And there's no reason why we need to rush into Batman. I mean, there was no reason why they needed to rush into Batman when they did,
BVS,
you know,
yeah,
in BVS. But, I mean, whatever, they did it. But I think we could take a breather. I mean, and Batman's, I can never get enough Batman, but I'm okay with waiting. You know,
really? You can't get enough Batman? You want to say, oh, something broken there. Like,
well,
that.
I mean, you know, I mean, I could, there's other versions of Batman that I can enjoy currently while I like the new Batman, the Animated Series Blu-ray collection, which came out today.
Dang.
So that's awesome. But yeah, I mean, let Matt Reeves do his thing. You know, you have this character in the hands of a guy who knows what he's doing. They want to have the right vision for this. They want to put this thing together. Great. All of this to me is good news. We don't need to be rushing into anything, especially with Batman. You know, the Superman thing is a different thing. You know, that's a whole different thing, because that's a movie that should be happening.
Yeah.
But this Batman thing, I know when they've been talking about it forever, and that's one of the things that, you know, is difficult when, you know, in this age, right, with blogging and social media and podcasts and stuff, where you wind up talking about these movies so much when they're not even a thing yet.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we've spoken more about the Batman than, like, some movies like Aquaman that are actually coming out. You know, I've said that over and over again on the podcast. Like, one of these themes with these DC movies is that we keep talking about the ones that aren't being made yet, as opposed to the ones that are actually coming out, you know, because of the types of characters that they are. But, yeah, let them take as long as they need to. As long as they keep making good movies in between and introducing us to some really cool characters, then maybe there's some upside to that. You know, maybe by the time they do get to the Batman, we've been introduced to some really great, maybe B and C list characters. And now you're going to introduce Batman, and then, you know, now you're on to something.
Yeah, you know, I wonder. I wonder if they push it. I mean, so we have Aquaman and Shazam coming out, and then you've got Wonder Woman 84. Well, Joker, then Wonder Woman 84. So I wonder if Matt Reeves' Batman becomes the official reboot of the DCU. Like, because it'll be the furthest out of the, you know, Trinity. Now I know that Wonder Woman is still part of that Trinity, and apparently they're, you know, if what we've read in terms of rumors is true, or what we heard, was that maybe there could be some sort of weird element where she messes with the timeline per some bargaining chip that she makes with a god. I don't know. There were some rumors flying around about that last week. I don't know. You know, who's to say what's going to happen with these characters and sort of where they go after, you know, we kind of get Wonder Woman 84. Like, if things do reset, and then that's what spawns the new kind of Batman film. I don't know.
Could be. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, and then who knows? Maybe it'll be a new Superman movie. I don't, you know. Last week we were talking how optimistic we were, and then this week I'm kind of like, uh-oh.
Well, I still think there's room for optimism because, again, I think we have to be very careful with getting caught up in talking about these movies that aren't a real thing yet, you know, that are in development still. Rather than, I mean, we were getting all optimistic because we were talking about movies that were coming out. There's Aquaman, there's Shazam, yeah. There's Joker. Wonder Woman 84 got pushed back, but it's still a thing, right? It's coming out. When we now start talking about the Batman and we start talking about what's going to happen with Superman and this, that's where you start to get pessimistic. Yeah, but it's like, you know what? Don't worry about it. That stuff's not coming out anytime soon. We don't even know. Anything can happen at this point. The whole thing could fall apart. So that's what I mean when I say, like, let's focus on the Aquaman. Stuff that actually is coming out. Hopefully it's good. And then we don't have to worry about the stuff that isn't coming out yet. We can look forward to the stuff that is coming out. And that's where the optimism comes in. And again, optimism in the sense that the reason why they pushed back Wonder Woman 84 was probably because they just felt it was a better slot for it. The reason why they're taking their time with the Batman is because they should, because you should get it right. So there's really not even like a, you don't have to be pessimistic even about these types of stories, even though on the surface it seems negative. They don't have to be. It's only negative because we're talking about a movie a lot in the Batman that may not be coming out for 3 years, if ever. Mm-hmm. And that's where all of a sudden, like, it starts to seem pessimistic because it's like you're just talking about something that isn't a reality yet.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah.
No, that's fair. Should be having our eyes on the prize, keeping our eyes on the prize and focusing on Aquaman, which comes out next month.
Yep.
Like, it's already November, but it kind of is. By the time this episode drops, it will be.
Yes, it will.
So, yeah, it will come out in a month. And, yeah, I mean, people are, the projections of that have started to roll out, although who knows.
Yeah, I pay no mind to those early projections.
Where that will actually shake out.
Brent had put up a post about that, and I replied to it, and I was like, you know, those projections are, they're worth about as much as, like, early polling numbers for elections now. Oh, they just don't mean anything, like, in the sense that, you know, how many times in this year alone have we seen movies 20, 30, 40 million higher than the opening week projections, you know, in the last couple of years? And it happens a lot with these types of movies, these superhero movies. For whatever reason, I guess the things that they use to gauge this stuff, whether it's social media interactions or just advance, whatever it is, don't always seem to work. Even Venom. I mean, Venom exceeded expectations. So, like, we're seeing movies now more and more exceed those early projections to the point where they're not something that I ever really paid a lot of attention to. Mm. And for about a minute, I started to, and I'm now just don't care about them anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as we get closer and closer to December 21st, which will be a epic shootout between many, many films, including Deadpool PG-13, which apparently is shooting new scenes. It's like crazy. I'm like, what's going on here? But it's going to be an interesting December, that's for sure. A lot of movies fighting for the dollar.
Yes.
The fan dollar. But we'll keep our eyes out and optimism and keep the optimism up for Aquaman for sure.
Yeah. So what else is going on? I know you're, are you excited about the idea of a new Flash Gordon movie?
I actually am. I was going to say I'm a big Flash Gordon fan, but I've only seen the movie. Never read the books.
You're talking about the 1980, the movie with the Queen soundtrack?
Hell yeah, man.
Got it.
That seems like finally, if with all the comic book, heroes out there, maybe it's about time we get a little Flash Gordon going on. which I remember creeped me the hell out. There's like the scene, it's like Timothy Dalton's character. Wait, he is in that movie. Yeah. They're putting their hands in these like holes where they get bit by these venomous. Did you sell the movie?
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Could be making that up, but I'm not. And he like gets bit. That scene freaked me out when I was a kid watching that.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I'm, you know, the director has a movie coming out shortly called Overlord. That's a J.J. Abrams produced movie, which is like Nazi zombies or something.
Something like that, yeah.
So looks a little weird. But you know, his track record is a little at best. So who knows where this will go.
Right.
But yeah, no.
Again, and it's not even, I mean, this is from the story that I read. It's like he would like to make a Flash Gordon movie. So it's not, again, you know, this is not anything official. You know, Flash Gordon is a character that it's been around forever and there's been many different versions, but I think it's a character that could be somewhat timeless if you wanted to be. Like, you could definitely revamp Flash Gordon. Mm-hmm. And make it a movie for today, and I think make it effective. And it's the type of thing that could, you know, really resonate with like kids and adults. So,
yeah,
I think it's a property worth. I mean, we talked about a few episodes ago. I think Tavo had asked a question about like, you know, movies that, or you know, that could get like a revamp, or TV shows maybe that could get like a movie revamp, something like that. Anyway,
yeah.
But we're talking about Cobra Kai. You know, types of movies that could come back as like TV shows. Well, Flash Gordon is one of those things where I think it could really benefit from like a modern touch.
Sure.
And you can do a lot with it. So I'm actually, yeah, I would be cool with that. And, you know, hope there's a lot of ways you could do that right.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And of course, again, it's like, you know, it's been out of the mainstream for quite some time. I mean, the actor, I forgot the name of the guy's name.
Sam Jones.
Yeah.
Because you never saw Ted?
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I made some epic cameos in Ted, and that was good to see. But yeah, I mean, you know, the funny thing is, you know, he's essentially a football player, right? And he gets, like, zapped up into outer space.
Yep. Yeah, he's a regular guy.
Yeah, and if you really think about it, it's kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, which is cool. I mean, I think that would be, you know, an interesting take, a Guardians of the Galaxy meets Flash Gordon. I mean, sure. Yeah, it's pretty dope. So here's to Flash Gordon. Hopefully, you know, something gets put in development and we're able to relive and re-embrace that character who's been around for quite some time. Speaking of galaxies far, far away, so the Earth was shaken up a bit with news. They say news. I've been arguing with folks about this for a couple of days now, but rumors have been circulating, I'll say, that the coveted James Mangold Boba Fett film has been canceled by Lucasfilm, by Kathleen Kennedy herself. Yep. Again, I'm hearing that that's inaccurate from some folks, but most news reports are saying it is accurate. And I got to be honest, good.
Yes.
As much as I would love to see a James Mangold Star Wars film, let's not do it with Boba Fett. So if that's 100% true that they're not going to do the film, fantastic. Oh, and that they were going to be focusing on The Mandalorian.
Correct.
Even
which
better.
Makes sense. Right? Because that's a
better.
Real thing already. So why wouldn't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's my question. So the Obi-Wan movie, probably dead, right?
I hope to God.
The Boba Fett movie, probably dead.
Yep.
Doesn't look like we're going to get a sequel to Solo, right?
Right.
So have we seen the end of the Star Wars stories for a long time?
You know, I think if it's revolving characters in which, actually, let me backpedal a little bit on this. I think no, but I don't think they're going to pop up in cinema anymore. I think we might be getting Star Wars stories in either show form or as like TV type content movies on the Disney streaming service.
That's interesting. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, now the thing is, you know, Rogue One made a lot of money. So is it maybe they're going to be done with trying to give you prequels to these characters, and they might just wait to find a story like a Rogue One that kind of sits in a little corner of the universe its own, and then you can make that movie just to give yourself a breather. But, you know, with Episode 9 coming and with this Rian Johnson trilogy seemingly coming, like, you start to ask yourself, like, is there even going to be room for, like, these Star Wars stories? Because we've seen that there is such a thing as too much Star Wars after a while. At least to the mainstream world. Not to us, but to mainstream fans. So maybe they do that. Maybe they become streaming service things. And maybe if they think they have an idea that could be like a Rogue One-esque type of thing, then they make it as a movie, because why wouldn't you want to make $1 billion? But
Right. I mean, they did some interesting stuff with Star Wars Battlefront 2, where they introduced these characters which were like an elite special forces group from the Empire called Inferno Squad. And their role was to, one, hunt down Luke Skywalker, and two, to infiltrate the Rebel Alliance and destroy it from the inside out. What actually ended up happening is that they ended up becoming Rebel sympathizers and turned against the Empire. So there's stuff like that that I think would make for interesting movies, for sure. Like, you know, think about it, a spy thriller set in the Star Wars universe where you've got, you know, people who are working for the Empire that, you know, try to infiltrate the rebellion. And I think that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I think stuff like that is great. I think, you know, exploring the underworld of Star Wars,
right,
I think would make for a good film, like a, you know, true gangster type film. Without any, you know, we don't need to explore the back history of Boba Fett. We don't, you know, there's so many other characters, so many other things that they can pull from to create new characters that I think would lend themselves well to really interesting stories. I mean, you know, we've talked about this multiple times when we've, you know, hit on Star Wars, but like, seven samurai type movies, I think those kind of things would work well. Yes. You know, I'm sure James Mangold was going to bring some of that Western vibe, but again, if you look at some of the stills and some of the things that, you know, that are coming out of The Mandalorian, it seems like they're kind of hitting that
right
tone. And who's to say that there won't be some references to Boba Fett in that way, but you know, ideally, I want to see them move away from the things we already know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it goes back to one of my theories that I've always had about movies, where it's like you learn the wrong lessons from the success of certain films. So, you know, Rogue One wasn't successful because it was a prequel. It was successful because it was a movie that resonated with people.
Right.
And it was a good movie. And, you know, the marketing was great, too, obviously, with emphasizing Vader and stuff. But, you know, that movie, yes, it was a prequel, but it was a new story.
Mm-hmm.
It was new characters for the most part. And so, but the lesson that they took out of it almost was like, well, prequels, that's what these movies have. These Star Wars stories now have to be prequels. So what can we do? Oh, Solo. Okay. Oh, Obi-Wan. Oh, Boba Fett. All right. Let's just start cranking those out. One, you know, character.
Yeah.
And that was probably never the right take on that.
Yeah. I mean, there's always been some interesting, and at this point it's in there, Legends category, but you know, the original Starkiller was a hidden apprentice that Darth Vader created, a Sith apprentice that he trained with the hope of, you know, killing the Emperor. That's a really interesting story too, because we don't know, You know, there were 19 years between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. So who's to say within that time period Vader didn't have his own Sith apprentice, you know, a hidden one. Who knows? So there's, you know, there's stuff like that. That's the only, you know, those are some of the things where I'm like, okay, it's loosely tied to some of the things that we're familiar with, but gives us new characters to kind of feed off of. So there's stuff like that. I mean, there are characters that are that were introduced to us in other mediums, right? So be it through the books and or through TV shows like Rebels, right? That are still around. Like Hera Syndulla from Rebels and Ezra Bridger, who disappears at the finale of Rebels,
right.
And Ahsoka, you know, who was introduced to us through the Clone Wars. So those are characters that I'd like to see a little bit more meat on the bone. So who's to say they might not have their own TV shows or pop up in like a cinematic version, but yeah, I think, and I, you know, this goes to reference the piece I wrote back for the Revenge of the Fans. You know, we haven't necessarily seen anything that steps outside of the Skywalker timeline, so to speak. So if you imagine the Skywalker line is, or the Skywalker family being a straight line, everything that we've seen both in the past and present is fairly connected to them. You know, Rogue One, obviously, if you think about that, it happens within the time period of A New Hope. Star Wars Rebels happens just before A New Hope, shortly before Revenge, or after Revenge of the Sith. So there's stuff that I'd like to see us fast forward, you know, like what does Star Wars look like 100 years after the last Skywalker has been, you know, dead? Or 1,000 years before the first Skywalker ever existed. You know, let's play in those realms a bit, because there's a plethora of stories to tell.
There definitely is that. It's just picking the right ones and the execution.
Yeah, that's ultimately what matters. And the funny thing is that, you know, with Han Solo, or the Solo Star Wars story, it's not, I don't, you know, the story's fine. The quality was great. I liked the movie. It's just a shame that it ended up being like the lowest performing Star Wars film, you know, in modern history. To steal a line from Brett of the Revengers podcast, he's like, his mind was blown that Venom ended up making more money in the box office than Solo, a Star Wars story. Like, that's crazy stuff. That really is crazy stuff. But, you know, ultimately it's a story that people didn't need right away. It's
right.
You know, you just don't need to do it. So
especially when you're just packing, you know, there's so much content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I mean, people who have seen it, like, love it. Yeah, it's great. You know, but, you know, they didn't turn out in the theaters to see it. It wasn't a story they needed to see right then and there. It's not, it wasn't like they were missing out on something, because the story of Han Solo is pretty much set in stone or set in carbonite.
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting things we had already seen, and that was my whole thing with that movie.
Exactly.
You know, so, yeah. All right, well, talking about, so let's get into the questions. And yes, we're going to start with Tavo, who says, what are your thoughts on what Dolph Lundgren said and why he decided to return to the role that made him famous? And do you like, not like his description of where we see Drago in Creed 2?
Okay, you go first, man.
So, you know, for those that aren't familiar necessarily with what he said, he basically talked about how he decided to come back for the movie because he really loved the script. And that he liked where they took Drago, that Drago is basically broken and just he's a like a defeated person in this. And the father-son relationship he found very interesting because I guess he had a bad relationship with his father as a kid. So those were a lot of the reasons why. So we're getting a a defeated, broken Drago in Creed 2, and I think that that's what we should be getting.
Yeah, so if I'm being honest, I've stopped reading any interviews from any of the actors talking about Creed 2. I've stopped. I was just before the show, I was text messaging Superman.
Rick, you could call him that. He's now Ryan, Superman.
Well, that's what he's under on my phone. But Rick Hsu of and Ryan Haas of Batman on Film, and I was like, guys, I'm not watching any more trailers. I'm not watching any TV spots. I'm not watching any exclusive content because I feel like ultimately I'm going to be watching some of the best stuff that's going to come from the movie, and I'm going to be disappointed when I walk out of that theater because the first one is so good. But what we talked about actually when I was a guest on their show was, you know, the idea that this is the only natural place that you can take Ivan Drago, right? So ultimately he was the, you know, the prize of Russia, and they put all of their hopes and dreams on his back to defeat the American Rocky Balboa, and ultimately he loses. So what happens to a person? It's very similar to what makes the Cobra Kai series so wonderful is that spin of, well, what happens to the villain of the story when they lose? And that is ultimately,
right,
you know, what's intriguing me about the whole Ivan Drago thing. Now, I know that people are like, oh, of course, oh, they're going to bring back, you know, a Drago to face Creed because naturally that makes sense. But when you really start to peel the layers back, it is and it does make a very, very interesting story. What happens to this person who basically has all of that access stripped away from him and then might end up in destitution, you know, homeless, or you know, now fighting for his life on the streets of Russia, or, you know, looking to provide for his family. What does he do to try to set his son up for success, right? What happens when that child who was raised in that environment now of, you know, poverty, potentially. I'm just making, you know, I'm not seeing the movie, so obviously I don't know if this is where they're going with it, but it's what's getting me excited. Like, what happens to the son who's grown up in poverty, whose father talks about the days where, you know, if he had beaten this dude, they would have been living a completely, like, his life would have been completely different.
Right.
And, you know, what that does for the son as he's coming up, because now he has a bone to pick with Rocky Balboa and his protege. You know, you've got Adonis Johnson or Adonis Creed, who looks at Drago as, this is the man that took my father away from me, and ultimately I was in a group home because of this whole situation. And then you've got, I don't even know, the younger Drago, who's like, my life, my family's life would have been different if your uncle hadn't beaten my father and taken things away from us. So they're both coming from a very interesting place, which, man, that tension, that's great. It's good stuff. I mean, there's no other way to go with that. That's perfect.
So yeah. I mean, the layer there of, you know, Drago is Ivan Drago basically killing Apollo Creed. It adds that extra layer to this, right? That say, like, a Cobra Kai thing didn't have.
Right.
Cobra Kai was really just, you know, the guy, he was a punk and he lost, and now you're looking at what he did. Well, Drago wasn't just like a punk and who lost. He was, you know, an elite athlete who killed a man in a ring, who happens to be the father of this kid now that his son is going to be fighting. So there's a lot of elements to this. And yeah, I mean, I could see where you would be intrigued reading this script and saying, well, yeah, I'm in. And what I like about it is, it, you know, we had talked about it, I think, a couple of episodes ago, how, like, this could have very easily been hokey.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's going to be. It doesn't seem like they're heading in that direction at all, which is great.
And I mean, you talk about the training elements of this. So, you know, think about where Adonis Creed has grown up now, right? So Adonis is basically when we see him in Creed, right, he is rebelling against the things that have helped us, like helped sort of elevate his standing in society, right? So he had an awesome cushy job, you know, he lives in a mansion, he drives a sweet car, all of that stuff, and he ultimately is like, no, I want to be a Creed, and you know, I want to quit my job, I want to pursue boxing, I want to pursue fighting, right? And Rocky at this point in his life is living in meager, you know, a meager lifestyle. And, you know, Rocky's all about taking him back to the street and teaching him like these are the best, you know, he's learning from like the ground up. Right. But imagine a dude who's been raised working and living and fighting and learning how to box from the ground up. And that's where Drago's coming from. Like older Ivan Drago came from the top down.
Right.
You know, like, so I'm so stoked, and I'm only speculating on all of this stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be just really disappointing if everything
from
just
trailers,
talked about
I'm really setting it up, but yeah. But no, I mean, that's what's getting me so
for a
excited.
Guy who has avoided interviews and anything related to this movie, you have this thing.
I put so much thought into
you
this
have
movie.
Certainly have.
I mean, look, I box. I love it. I just, you know, the last thing I saw was like the scene where younger Drago runs up the stairs and his father's there, and it's like, and they're looking, you know, at the statue of Balboa, and it's like retribution, you know, is coming. That's how it comes off to me, and I'm like, that's perfect. So November 21st or 22nd, November 21st, I think it's the day before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So I will be there in the theaters, probably the next film I see.
Hopefully not being disappointed after you've built up this
entire
plot of this film.
Oh, we'll have to do a show after that. Ugh.
Yeah.
I'll try not to show up at the theater with my boxing gloves on. Might not be able to get in.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Nah.
All right. So we have Ron Diesel. He said, with the recent news about why Fox wants to do a PG-13 movie as it relates to China, is it a good idea, and what does this do to other movies that are meant to be rated R going forward?
I understand the business sense of the, you know, Chinese audience, and that makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Chinese is a huge market. Huge market. Let's put it in context, okay? Star Wars was hiring Chinese actors to be in their films. That's the whole reason, and it sucks to say this, but that's like one of the reasons, one of the main reasons why they cast Donnie Yen in Rogue One, because Star Wars as a concept just does not perform well in China. In fact, it underperforms. The Last Jedi was pulled in China after a couple of weeks. So I can understand the impetus of Fox to re-release Deadpool specifically for Chinese audiences, because it just means it's untapped potential, right? And it
sure.
just makes more money.
Yeah.
But it also makes sense here to a degree. Although the timing of it is just odd, but you know, why not get another bite at the apple? For those kids who can't see it, for the angsty teenagers that need a good laugh or something. Yeah, I'm sure they're going to go. I'm sure it's going to make money here again, you know, during that time period. Do I think it's going to hurt rated R comic book movies? Not at all. Not at all. I just think that they're diversifying the brand.
Yeah, and I think that so here's my thoughts on PG-13 versus R. The lines between PG-13 and R have become significantly blurred.
It's like two F-bombs.
Yeah. I mean, and as a society in general in this country, we tend to have bigger issues with sex than violence. So it's a lot easier for a movie with violence to be PG-13 than it is for a movie with a lot of sex.
Right.
So I think overall, like a most of the PG-13 movies, like this whole thing about rated R and like, it's more of a branding thing. than anything mm-hmm. else these days. Like, we rated R, like, it's almost like it people have this thought in their head that it's going to be something so much more than it really is.
Right, right.
So I don't really know that the rating itself is that important. Because, like you said, it can come down to a couple of little things. But yeah, I mean, you want to maximize your investment. And also, most comic book films and superhero films really aren't meant to be rated R.
Right.
So I think that, like, how many properties out there can legitimately say, well, you know what, this property would be better if it was rated R? Like, Deadpool clearly is one, right? Just because mm-hmm. of what they were able to do with it. But, I mean, there aren't that many. In Logan, yeah. But although Logan, you know, Logan very easily, a couple of cuts could have gotten that to be a PG-13 movie. Still would have been amazing.
For Logan, it's, you know, it's funny. It's not even the curse. It was the violence, for yes. sure.
Right. And you could have cut back a little bit of that, got a PG-13, and it still has the same yeah. plot, story, acting, everything else, right?
What about a movie like 300?
Well, so this is what I mean. But these are like, so
it's stylized.
You're
going to
have your movies
violence.
Like that, right? That will, it's, they're violent. The violence is inherent to the plot, to the characters, where mm-hmm. an R maybe is going to work better. But for like Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman and Spider-Man and Iron Man and any of these characters, like
PG-13.
Yeah. Or yeah. I mean, there's nothing. So I don't know that like all of a sudden it's going to be a hindrance. Cause like how many R-rated like superhero movies have there actually been? So it's not like they're all of a sudden we're neutering the entire comic book movie industry by saying right. that PG-13 is the way to go because it's better for the Chinese market.
Yeah. I mean, it depends, you know, on the subject matter, right? So, great example, V for Vendetta. That movie has like pedophilia. It's sort of violent, but not really. It's more of like some of the, it does have young death, like the one little girl gets killed there, and it's a rated R movie. There are some, you know, some things in context are just not, I think, for the PG-13 audiences. There's another one I just had to, oh, The Watchmen,
right?
There's rape,
yes,
you know, there's nudity,
right?
So, you know, yeah, that's a rated R film. You know, I think where you get into, where you kind of get into an interesting, you know, I don't want to say slippery slope, but like basically where the PG-13 lines start to blur a bit is in the violence. When you don't have nudity and you don't have any of those, like, you know, the contextual content, you know, be it with like sexuality or, you know, adult themes like rape and sex mm-hmm. and all that stuff, when it's just violence
yep.
or language, you can get away with a lot.
That's right. Yeah. And that's what I was saying before. We're much yeah. more comfortable with violence than sex. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I, you know, I agree. I think there, it, with like Logan and stuff like that, there maybe, you know, like they'd cut like, I don't even know how they rate this. Maybe it was like five scenes, you know, there's five scenes of too much, you know, super violence, then we're not going to give you the PG-13. We're going to give you the R. I don't know.
The other thing to think about when you're talking about R versus PG-13, and it's not just about China, right? Even here, there is a difference, right? Theater counts.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, your audience as a whole, things like that, that, you know, there's a reason why R-rated movies historically don't make as much as the others, because they're just, you're not, it's not as broad, right? So there's a lot of things to consider when doing that. So for me, like, if you're going to go for the R, it should be worth it from a creative perspective.
Right.
Not just like a marketing tool to say like, oh, this is an R-rated superhero movie.
Right. And I don't think, you know, I don't think Deadpool is guilty of that. I mean,
no, definitely. Deadpool yes. should have been an R, because nothing that they did in Deadpool should have been ratcheted back.
Right. And the thing is, it goes beyond the violence, because yes, absolutely, there's violence. There's, people losing, having their heads
Yeah.
chopped off
There's
and
sex,
arms,
though, and all
limbs.
kinds
But
of
there's like some, yeah, there's some
depravity in
sex.
that
There's
movie.
really nudity, but there's like, some stuff. So I'm interested to see what they do cut from Deadpool to make it a PG-13, and I'm even more interested to see what they put in.
Right. Well, and I mean, I think we'll get an idea of how blurred those lines are
Yeah.
when we see what they cut and put in and how much different the movie really is to get that PG-13.
I mean, think about it. Can you imagine where he goes on some like cursing tirade and it's just all bleeped out?
Yeah, no,
Like, I could
that
be
would be
so
no
it
good.
becomes so self-aware that it does that because it's Deadpool, and of course that's what he'd likely do.
Yeah, no,
Or
that wouldn't be good at all.
I think that'd be pretty funny.
Well, it might be funny, but yeah, I guess. I
I
don't
mean,
know.
I'm not going to go back to the theaters to see a PG. I mean, I own the film.
I'll watch it just out of curiosity, just to see like what they did,
Yeah.
how different it is. But
I don't have money to burn
I'm not
like
going to
that,
the
man.
theaters. I'm not going to the theater to watch it, but I'll watch it at some point just out of curiosity to see how the differences are.
Yeah.
All right. So, final question from Brett Thomas Miro. He says the year is 3023. It's been 100 years since the last superhero movie because the MCU and DC burned everyone out by 2023. Who's the first hero to make a comeback and usher in a new generation of superhero films?
Captain America. No, I don't know.
I want to say Batman because apparently we could just never not have Batman.
Apparently.
Yes.
Yeah. What if
Always
it's
have to go to
like
that well.
Yeah, I think that'd be, you're probably right. I was just trying to think of something that would be something relevant to the age, and I'd say maybe the X-Men.
Relevant to 3023? I'm not sure what will be relevant in
I you know
3023,
who
but
that I don't know, like a there might be some Daft Punk comic book that becomes made into, I don't know, Howard
huh.
the
Howard the Duck. Okay, I think that's a good choice.
Duck.
Yeah.
Because ducks will be extinct by then.
Well, maybe by 3023 we'll finally get that cyborg movie.
I know. Oh jeez, that would be. It would be funny to think about what it would be. Maybe it's like a nostalgia film, They'll be like, oh, back then,
Yeah.
they like kind of look back on time. I
Huh.
don't know.
All right.
Cool.
I'm still saying Batman.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, because,
Some futuristic. It'll be a Batman Beyond.
everything. Yeah.
It'll be that Batman Beyond that Nathan pitched to us.
Yes, that's the movie that should come
There it
out in
is.
3023 to
There it
kick
is.
this whole thing off all over again.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds
All
cool.
right. So that's it.
All right, let's do some plugs and then let's skedaddle.
Yeah. So, of course, go to the fanboygarage.com. Listen to the current episode archive. Send the show an email if you're not on Twitter. You could also buy some stuff at our merch store. We got some cool t-shirts and stuff you should check out. And, of course, you could shop on Amazon using the Amazon Associates link. All of those things help out this show. Also helping out this show by joining the conversation and helping to spread the word. We, thank each and every one of you who have done that. And you can do that by tweeting at the Fanboy Garage on Twitter. And if you want to talk to us directly, you can reach me at RealCLMighty.
And or you can fight me at Starting Sith as well on Twitter. And also, we do have an Instagram page. So if you'd like to check us out on there and ask questions, feel free to do so at the Fanboy Garage on Instagram.
There you go.
And quick plug, Thursday night, I will be special guest with a few others on the Batman on Film podcast with I say this all the time. Shoe Rick. Rick Shoe. I don't know why I want to say Shoe Rick or Superman, but Rick Shoe and Ryan Haas and Jason Ward of making Star Wars. And that's a true honor for me because I've been following Jason Ward for quite some time. So we'll be talking about Star Wars.
When you say Thursday night, because now this episode drops on Thursday, are you recording it Thursday?
I'm recording on Thursday.
Okay.
So it'll likely, I don't know when they drop their episodes. Maybe it's like Monday. Maybe it's over the weekend, but I'll let you guys know.
So sometime after you're hearing this.
Yeah, you'll get to hear my.
Be on the lookout for the Batman on Film satellite episode on Star Wars featuring our own Aaron Varola and his pals from Batman on Film.
Shoe Rick.
Shoe Rick, Superman, Rick Shoe, Ryan Haas, and
Jason Ward
from Making Star Wars. So that's going to be awesome. So check that out.
Yeah. No, I can, you know, obviously I can talk Star Wars all frickin' day. Which we, you know, we should dedicate an episode or five to Star Wars. I mean, it's been kind of quiet. You know, when you think about it. Outside of this whole Boba Fett thing. It's been really, really quiet.
Well, I mean, look, episode 9's coming. So that's going to be a whole, then who knows what the conversation is going to be like about that, around that movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's been filming. And I wonder when we're going to get a trailer for it. Because let me think. We got the first trailer for The Force Awakens some 8 months before it was released, I think. So I wouldn't be surprised if we got it sometime around December, January.
Right. Yeah. And then I'm sure there'll be, like I said, plenty of conversation. These days, it's Star Wars has become all or nothing in when it comes to conversation. So it's passion on both sides.
Yeah, although I'd say, you know, conversations have been okay so far. Decent. Yeah. Decent. Not like some other conversations I've been having with people about some other films. But anyways, okay, so let's get out of here.
Yes, please, let's go.
All right, guys.
All right.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week.
All right, take care.